It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a couple of new documentaries that will be featured at the Landlocked Film Festival in Iowa City this weekend. The land in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota along the Mississippi River, we all know, is stunningly beautiful. The area is not as good for agriculture as many parts of the Heartland because the glaciers didn't deposit our famous rich soil along the bluffs. But recently, the land has become very valuable for something else, the mining of frack sand. The new documentary, The Price of Sand, will air on Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Iowa City Library, followed by a panel discussion. And the man behind the film, Jim Tittle, is here with me now. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for being here today.
Well, thanks for asking.
And what inspired your interest in this subject?
Well, it was very personal. I grew up in Red Wing, which is a river town, Mississippi River town, just south of the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And I still have family there. I live in St. Paul now. I'm a filmmaker. But a couple of years ago, I guess it was about 3 years ago, my mother found out, and my brother who lives nearby, found out that a company had bought the quarter section near their houses and planned to build an open pit mine. And a lot of the work that was being done to get this thing going had been done very, very quietly. My brother's a realtor, and he didn't even know about the sale, but the sale involved, I think it was $1.6 million. For that quarter section. So it was a lot of money. And it was all very quiet. And then they just announced they were going to do this. And so we had a lot of questions. And that's what started me on the track to making this film.
Well, and $1.6 million for a quarter section, that was a really surprising price for
land. Especially during a recession, for a piece of kind of mediocre farmland and some bluff. Not a typical price.
So when you started to look a little bit deeper, you were surprised to find that there were so many of these open pit mines in Minnesota, right?
I had no idea. Well, actually not in Minnesota, in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I pondered that as I made the film. I think the reason for that probably has to do with two things. One, there is more of a history of silica mining in Wisconsin. Silica is used for glass and for other things, so there are a few mines in existence there already. And also, I think the regulatory environment was looser in Wisconsin. So when I found out that this wasn't just an isolated incident, then I started going to Wisconsin to ask questions and to see what silica mines really looked like.
And explain for those of us who don't know what these mines are all about, because this is frack sand mining. This is not fracking, which is something we've heard a lot about recently. What are they actually trying to dig out of the ground here?
I'll try to make it simple. First of all, in fracking, oil companies inject a slurry of chemicals, water, and particulates into the ground. And what they're doing is they're using very high pressure, hydraulic pressure, to crack the rock that has bubbles of oil and gas in it. They want to get out all those little bubbles. So the high hydraulic pressure cracks the rock, but they have to force something into those cracks to hold it open, something like little ball bearings. And in the trade, that's called propant. Well, the most common propant is silica sand. And the difference between silica sand and regular sand, which you can see in my film, I've got some microscopic photography. Regular sand is just kind of a mishmash of all kinds of tiny little particles, and they're irregular shapes. There's a lot of variation in it. Silica sand is pure quartz, and these are little tiny, they vary in size, but they're little beads of very hard material, so they're perfect for this process.
And
so that's what they're trying to get with a frack sand mine. They want that propant that they can use for fracking.
Okay, and when I spend time on the bluffs of the Mississippi River, I don't think of it as a particularly sandy place.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have along the Mississippi River that makes this the perfect place for this kind of mining?
Well, again, I'm not a geologist. I don't play one on TV.
Right, but you did talk to a few in the making of this film.
I talked to several people who know about geology, yes. And, in fact, my brother has a degree in geology, which is handy. Well, we're in the what's called the Driftless Region, and as I understand it, what that means is the glaciers stopped before they got here. There's older geology. There's, of course, topsoil. Then there's a layer of limestone, and then under that, there's frac sand or silica sand. There are a couple different formations. That sand is very old. It's hundreds of millions of years old, and it was originally beach sand 500 million years ago. And it was laid down and rolled for, I think, millennia, and that's why it's so round. It's just been rolled and rolled and rolled. It's under pressure, and usually when you find it, it's not loose sand. It's actually a very soft sandstone. Often it's white, sometimes it's yellow or reddish, depending on the mineral content.
Okay, and you actually, in the film, you show bluffs where you can see this kind of
sure.
sandstone. So it's something that a lot of us have seen.
Sure, yeah, we're all used to it. You know, as it weathers, it gets gray. But, you know, as kids, we used to play in it. You know, you can carve it out. You can take a tin can and you can cut out sections of it. When you disrupt it, there's dust. And the health problem, well, I guess, ask me questions about the dust and I can go on and on. But,
right.
Yeah, that's another topic.
Well, first let me ask you, so mm-hmm. what is the method that... these companies are using to reclaim the sand because they have to break up this sandstone. And although it's soft, I mean, that's still a big undertaking.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been inside a few sand mines, but I've never actually stood in a sand mine that was operating. I met people in the industry, but when I started making my film, I started by making a series of short YouTube videos. I didn't really think I was going to make a full-length film, and then it kind of turned into that. So by the time I'd made the shorts, the sand industry was well aware of me. In fact, I had one short video that got 10,000 hits in 3 months. So they were aware of me, and therefore I didn't get invited to tour any sand mines. So my knowledge of sand mining comes from reading about it and talking to people who've worked in mines and whatever. But my understanding is that when they mine, they have to tear off whatever's above the sand. Usually there's a layer of, like I say, topsoil, and there's limestone to remove. Often they have to do blasting to get that out. And then once they get to the actual sand, it's soft enough that when they start digging it out with backhoes and heavy equipment, it falls apart and turns into granular sand. But then they still have to clean it. And the cleaning involves a washing process and then a sifting process. And then the water that's used for washing, and they use a lot of water, millions of gallons of water, the water that's used goes into settling ponds, and they let the particulates settle out, and then they reuse the water. And one of the problems associated with that is that they often use chemicals to help those particulates settle out. And there's been a lot of debate about what those chemicals do to groundwater and how dangerous they are.
Now, of course, a lot of the neighbors that you talked to in this film were upset about the changing landscape. They were upset about the noise from the mines. They were upset about the lights. Many of these mines operate 24 hours a day, so they'll have a large stadium-type lighting. Mm-hmm. So there's this sort of constant sound and the constant light. But health concerns were something else that a lot of people talked about. And you were assured by people involved in the mining that there are not health concerns with the silica sand. But you also spoke to Crispin Pierce, who has a PhD mm-hmm. in public health at the University of Wisconsin at Eau Claire. And let's hear a little bit of what he has to say.
The size and the shape of silica make it a particularly dangerous substance. It is regulated as a human carcinogen. It causes silicosis, it causes tuberculosis, causes problems with kidney disease. According to studies on silicosis, we can get a certain amount, maybe up to about 3 micrograms per cubic meter, and we have no ill health effects. But above that level, so if we have agricultural dust as well as dust coming from a sand plant, we may be above that threshold, and then we may begin to see the scarring and the progression of disease associated with silica exposure. We have evolved as species that have been involved, exposed to volcanic eruptions and working in the soil and traveling, and dust has been a part of our growing up and our evolution. What's particularly of concern with crystalline silica is that it has reactive oxygen-silicon bonds between those two atoms. And when they are broken in what we call freshly fractured silica, like during a crushing operation or an explosion, they're very reactive, these oxygen radicals. So not only are they of the size, the ones we're concerned about, of a size to get down into the deep lung, but they have reactive surfaces and even jagged edges.
That's a moment from the documentary that we're talking about, The Price of Sand. The documentarian Jim Tittle is here with me now. And that was Crispin Pierce from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire talking about some of the health hazards of being exposed to too much of this silica sand or the silicon sand dust that can be kicked up in the mining process. And now, of course, people involved in the mining would say that the dust is contained and will not cause problems for neighbors. But again, in talking with neighbors, you did talk to people who were already experiencing problems with this dust. What did you find?
Oh, yes. I met a woman named Vicky Trinko, who's in the film. And Vicky grew up on a farm in a place called Cokes Valley, Wisconsin. Very rural, beautiful place, you know, open farmland studded with bluffs. And some of these bluffs are being torn apart for silica sand. And in fact, there's aerial photography of these mines in my documentary. Well, Vicky moved back to the family farm, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, and she's been raising beef cattle there. A sand mine opened across the road from her house, and a lot of truck traffic, a lot of just irritating things in the noise and the traffic and everything. But then she noticed she was having problems breathing, and she didn't really want to admit to herself that it was a medical problem. And then she went away on vacation and came back a week later. And when she was on vacation, everything cleared up. When she came back, she still had problems. So she went in to see the doctor. And he said, well, you're developing asthma. And the asthma, the only thing that had changed in her environment was all of the silica dust. She told me she had found silica dust on her car window in the morning, silica dust in her house. It was really kind of scary. Even after staying an afternoon at her farm, I was coughing. You don't see the dust in the air. It's so fine, it stays suspended, and really it's not often not visible. It's the stuff that's not visible that's the worst. That's the stuff that gets down into your lungs.
The mines that have been under operation in Wisconsin for some time, and Minnesota, and now Iowa, have any of these mines been closed? I'm wondering what the lifespan of one of these mines is.
Well, it's funny. It depends. Some of them, for instance, there's a huge mine operated by one of the world's largest mining companies. That's Unimin. Mm-hmm. And this huge mine opened down in Tunnel City, Wisconsin. There's some footage of it in my film. That mine, was very thoroughly planned. There was a huge capital investment. They put a processing facility right at the mine. And they secured over 1,000 acres on a railhead, which means their transportation costs are cut low. And transportation is a big part of the price of frac sand. So that mine's going to be there 20 or 30 years, and they're going to operate it as long and fast as they can. On the other hand, I got to know a guy who was a landsman who goes out and sets up contracts for silica mines. And he wouldn't appear in the film, but he did give me a lot of background information and took me on a few tours of the mining country. And we walked into one mine one weekend, and he said, well, this mine's been open for less than 2 years, and now it's closed. And the reason it closed was because the cost of trucking the sand was too much. It was too far away from a railhead, and prices had dipped, so they just closed it up. So it varies. But in general, they say with the capital investment in the mine, they want to go 10 to 20 years.
And what happens to the land after the mine?
Well, that's kind of interesting. The sand industry, the silica sand industry, is well-funded, and there always seem to be public meetings that occur before these mines are opened, and I've been to a number of them. I've also talked to, off the record with people, who work for these companies. And in general, they'll make allusions to, well, you've got a bluff here, you can't farm it, you're paying taxes on it, and when we're done, it's going to be nice and flat, and it might be farmland, or it will be farmland. But I talked to a guy with a PhD in soil microbiology who worked for years on reclamation projects in the coal fields out east, and he now lives back on his family farm in southwestern Wisconsin, and he told me, in his opinion, there's no way that's going to be farmland, and the problem is the disruption of the soil and just what you'd have to do to it. Even if you move it back onto this flatland, you're not going to have productive farmland. So that's kind of a point of contention. He said, and I haven't heard any soil experts say you can farm it. I've just heard guys or publicity guys or geologists say, yeah, you could farm that.
Now, obviously, with as close as this is to your mother's land and as close as the subject is to your heart, we have talked a lot about the people who are experiencing problems with these mines. But you also, in the film, you talk to a lot of people who are just incredibly grateful for the jobs, because, of course, a lot of these mines started opening during the recession when it was really hard to find work.
Well, I have to argue a little bit there. I didn't talk to a lot of people who are incredibly grateful. That's a bit of an exaggeration. I was able to speak to some people who are working in the industry. I was lucky enough to meet some truckers in New Auburn, Wisconsin, who gave me some of their time and told me, they were really, I think that's maybe what you're referring to, Steve Kuhn's really happy, that he's got a way to keep his family fed. And off the record, again, I met a lot of people who told me about their part in the sand industry. The thing is, they don't want to appear in a film because they're worried about, repercussions.
Right.
So, yes, there has been some positive economic impact. The problem with mining is that, well, first of all,
well,
it's not something you can do over and over again like farming.
Right, right. Well, and we are out of time, but thank you so much for talking with me today, Jim.
Sure. Nice talking to you.
Jim Tittle is the filmmaker behind the new documentary, The Price of Sand. It will air at the Landlocked Film Festival Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. at the Iowa City Public Library, followed by a panel discussion with experts from the University of Iowa College of Public Health. This is Talk of Iowa.
Where we played, the hills are gone. The trucks go rumbling by. Tears are in my eyes. The wind roars, my lungs are sore, hills are gone. The mine has cut them down. House is shaken.